I actually saw something really similar, and I was like, I could imagine really having any twins. But I decided to coordinate with you instead.
Cool, complimenting colors.
Did you cover up my name yet?
Yeah. I'll have to show you. It looks, the basement turned out really good. Have all new floors in, and it's painted, and
yeah.
The whole new room. Yeah, it is. It's still there. It's just covered. Yeah.
Namely, you're be there for future generations.
Yeah. See, we wrote, when we ripped all the ship sheetrock down, we wrote on the foundation.
Okay.
With our names and the year on there.
Did you get enough snow to do any plowing this week?
But
no plowing. My father-in-law's house. Yeah. Yeah. I did my own. It was pretty easy. But 2 inches.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like cute ones up at the top, and then all the like plastic ones at the bottom. And she just sits on the couch and does this for like 20 straight minutes, just like tapping them.
I decided if they mess with the tree, they're going into the garage. So. Yeah, I'm like, this is over. I'm not picking stuff up anymore.
Yeah,
but I've been leaving the dog inside too, so it's like. Every time you come home.
What's eaten?
What's eaten? Yeah. I got him this really cool toy yesterday that had like this treat that looked like it was substantially in it, like thinking that he'd keep him busy. And I found it this morning and it was totally gone. It's like that did not last you.
The only thing that keeps my dog busy for a substantial amount of time are the frozen marrow bones.
My dog doesn't like that stuff.
Really?
And I think because our other dog used to attack him over it.
Oh.
So now he's afraid to touch him. I'm like, that dog's gone. I'm like, it's your house now.
You're safe.
Nobody's going to get you.
Oh, we did that.
I've never seen a toy that's fully in the
See, we stopped doing that because we did the original bark box, and at first the toys were really great and sturdy, and then as it went on, they were just crappy, and Scout would shred them in like 3 minutes.
Yeah.
At least they like send us a replacement.
Yeah,
I know. That's actually maybe not a bad idea.
Oh, really?
All right, everyone, I'm going to call this meeting to order. This is the December 4, 2019 meeting of the Chelan County Hearing Examiner. My name is Andy Kotkamp, and I've been appointed by the Chelan County Board of Commissioners to serve as a land use hearing examiner. My job is to render decisions on various applications that are authorized to come before me, which include appeals of administrative interpretations, riparian and wetland variances, and plot amendments. That's what we have on the agenda for today. I consider any testimony and evidence presented at today's hearing, as well as all the written materials that are already on file, in order to make my decision. The hearing process will take place as follows. I'll talk about the first item first. This is the administrative appeal. For that one, we're going to do something a little bit different. I will make an introduction to that, and the appellant will be given an opportunity to present their testimony and evidence. Knowing that the appellant has the burden of proof to show that the administrative interpretation was an error. Then the county will be able to have an opportunity to present their staff report or whatever information that they wish to. That was the basis of the administrative interpretation, and then the appellant will be given an opportunity to any rebuttal information or testimony that they wish to as well. This is on this administrative appeal. This is a matter between the appellant and the county. It's not a time, although there has been significant public comment that was submitted on that. I just want everybody to know this is not going to be a time for public testimony on this matter because it's, I'll explain that in greater detail. But you won't be able to, unless you're called by the appellant. For the other matters, staff will present their report and make whatever recommendations they wish to make. Then the applicant or the applicant representative will be given an opportunity to present their testimony and evidence. The applicant does have the burden of proof to show compliance with all the applicable laws and regulations. Then if somebody from the public on those matters came to testify, they'll be given an opportunity to do so. And because the applicants have the burden of proof that the applicants wish to submit any rebuttal testimony, they will be able to do that. If you are going to testify, I'm going to have you come up to this table here. On the left side of the hearing room, I'll have you state your name and address. If you're going to give evidence, I will swear you in as a witness. And ask that you keep your testimony relevant to the application that we're talking about and not to other issues beyond the scope of that proposal. And if you have anything in writing that you want to submit today, you can do so. I have the option on all of these matters to keep the record open if I think there's a need for additional written testimony to be submitted. But in any event, my written decision will be made within 10 working days after I close the public record. We have an attendance roster over here at the entry of the hearing room. Please be sure you signed in. If you haven't signed in yet, you can do so on your way out. Coming to testifying at today's hearing, you may obtain important legal rights, so it's important that we're able to document your presence here today. If you do have any cell phones, would you take a minute now to check them and make sure that they're either in silent mode or turned off as a courtesy to everybody else that's taking time out of their morning to come to this hearing. Now, except as provided by the Cheyenne County Code regarding requests to reopen hearings and requests for reconsideration, my decision on each of these matters will be final and conclusive unless they are appealed. Appeals on all these matters would be by what's called a land use petition action. They have to be filed within 21 days of the date of the issuance of my decision. The appeals are filed with Cheyenne County Superior Court. If your appeal isn't timely filed, your appeal will be barred. So the bottom line is that if you're considering an appeal of any of my decisions, you should seek immediate legal advice. I reviewed each item on today's agenda. I don't have any interest in the properties or the proposals to be heard today, and I'll be able to fairly and objectively consider each item. And outside of receiving or reviewing the staff report for each item, along with all the attachments to the staff report, which included application materials, noticing documents, public comments, agency comments, basically other than receiving or reviewing the entire planning staff file of record, I've not had any communication of a substantive nature regarding any items on today's agenda. So with those representations, if there is anybody here today who objects to my participation as a hearing examiner, for any item, you do need to come forward and state so at this time. All right, hearing none, we'll turn to the first item on today's agenda. As I indicated, this is an administrative appeal. Given file number AA-2019-005, this is an appeal of an administrative interpretation regarding the application of the Peshawashton Urban Growth Area District Use Charge as it relates to short-term rentals. And there's an appeal of that that's been filed by Mr. and Mrs. Davis through their attorneys. For the record now, I'm going to admit into the record the staff report, the administrative interpretation, the appeal documents. There has been there's been email communications between myself and the appellant's lawyer. There is the appellant's submission dated, letter dated November 27, 2019, the appellant's administrative appeal memorandum, and a letter to the hearing examiner. And there are exhibits A through J of the submissions by the appellant. All of those will be admitted into the record. There have been substantial public comments that have been submitted, as I indicated, and quite frankly, they were invited to comment. But this is a matter that is between the appellant and the county regarding the specific interpretation and the specific appeal that was filed by the appellant. So to that extent, public comments are not specifically relevant to this legal interpretation as to the meaning of the terms within the kind of code. So, but I am going to admit them into the record just so that they're there in case there's an appeal, and I don't want to have them not admitted. In fact, I'm going to admit the entire planning staff file into the record at this time by this reference. And as I indicated, I will turn this matter over to the appellant for their presentation. I'll have you identify yourself for the record, please.
Thank you. Richard LeBlanc Jones, appearing on behalf of the applicants, appellants. To my right is Reva Davis, and to her right is her husband, Craig Davis.
Mr. Jones, will you be providing any testimony yourself?
In an abundance of caution, I would ask to be sworn in.
All right.
So any statement of fact that I might make can be admitted.
All right, thank you. I'm going to have each of you raise your right hands just in case somebody gives testimony. Do each of you swear or affirm under penalty of perjury that any testimony you give today will be the truth?
Yes.
All right, thank you very much. And I'd ask that Mr. Jones, when you speak, even though your voice is distinctive, you case this matters appeal, I want to make sure that the court knows who's speaking between you and Mr. Davis. So just make sure that this is Mr. Davis, this is Mr. Jones.
Understood.
All right, thank you very much. Please proceed.
Can you sit?
Yeah. Your Honor, there's a couple of preliminary matters that I want to address. And they'll be in the form of motions. The first is an objection to the hearing and a request that the hearing be continued. For this reason, there was a published notice of this hearing for a hearing that was scheduled originally for November. There was no subsequent publication of a notice to alert the public of these proceedings today. The difficulty that I see with that failure to provide notice is that the substance of the appeal, it being an administrative interpretation of 1122030, has impact beyond the subject property. Unlike other land use matters that you'll be considering today that are relevant only to a particular piece of property, the administrative interpretation that has been offered by the department has a far wider impact on hundreds of potential properties in the county. And as such, I think that the notice should have been provided to, a published notice should have been provided so that other members of the public could be here. That it runs in tandem with a second motion, that being that this hearing be opened, not only continued, but opened up for public hearing, given the same, for the same reason, that the impact of this administrative interpretation has much wider impact on properties within Chelan County than my client's property, although they are now the tip of the sword, as it were. So I would be asking that this matter be continued to not only provide adequate notice to the public, but to open the hearing up to public testimony.
All right, let me ask that. My recollection is that on November 21st, did we continue it on the record at that opener public hearing?
Yes.
Okay. So at the open record public hearing that was given notice on November 21st, 2019, on the record, the hearing was continued to today's date, according to staff. Again, I don't have an independent recollection of that. So because the continuance was provided at the hearing, the hearing examiner is willing to deny the request for continuance because of inadequate notice. The hearing examiner has already stated the hearing examiner's position regarding public testimony. As I indicated, the appellant is able to call whatever witnesses you wish to call. The county, on the other hand, is limited to whatever evidence they relied upon or for their administrative interpretation. But the request that this be open for the general public to come in and say whatever they want to say that may or may not be relevant, the hearing examiner is not going to open the record for that purpose. Again, providing, and I thought my email to the appellant on November 21st, 2019, I thought it was clear, but the appellant maybe didn't feel so, but the appellant's free to call whatever witnesses you wish to I understand from a preliminary discussion today that the appellant didn't have the same reading of my email as I did. And so what I've indicated, if the appellant wants to make this request, is that I will keep the record open for the appellant to submit additional written testimony declarations, if you will, because of the appellant's misunderstanding about what the process would be used to do. But so just to be very, very clear, in case this matter is appealed, that the hearing examiner is allowing the appellant to call witnesses in their discretion at this hearing.
If I may ask, how many days will the record remain open for submittals?
I don't know. Let's finish the hearing, and then I'll look towards your recommendation and your request.
Sure.
And we'll frankly, I don't see the need for more than 2 weeks, but Christmas is coming up.
We'll keep the holidays in mind then.
Yeah.
My third motion is one to permit cross-examination of the county's staff here at hearing after they've had an opportunity to present their staff recommendation.
That motion is denied. The reason why that motion is denied is because staff has presented their interpretation and have not really made provided any facts as far as I can tell. They looked at the code and said this is what we think the code means and the interpretation stands for itself. So in that sense, I'm not going to allow them to cross-examine your witnesses and have the county attorney here and vice versa to not cross county staff. Now, if the county were to have called witnesses, then we would be a different deal.
Understood. My final motion is to continue this hearing as there is outstanding discovery. Prior counsel made a request for documentation, emails similar to a FOIA request, and those documents, emails, and correspondence between the county and staff have not been provided to date, and that it hampers our ability to supplement the record. And to offer them as a part of the record.
I'm not sure what, first of all, the hearing examiner has not signed any orders granting discovery or doing anything of that nature. I assume that this is in the nature of some public records.
Yes, it's a public records disclosure request.
That's outside the authority of the hearing examiner to do. If there was some request of me to make orders, I would see if I have the authority to do that before I did it. Based simply upon the motion and the representations made, I'm not going to continue this matter. It's been pending for some time, as I indicated earlier, and other than page request, there's been no other request for the hearing examiner to get involved with whatever public records disclosure or the Superior Court, to my knowledge, has not been asked to get involved with a public disclosure request. So that request will be denied.
One clarification of that is that if you determine that a period of time, say 2 weeks, for additional testimony to be provided, would you be in a position to urge the department to look into that records request and to expedite its submission so that that can be added to the record? Do you have that authority?
Not without looking at the... I think that the code does not give me any authority on public records requests. I think that the code does give me authority on issuing subpoenas and those types of things for discovery with a particular hearing. And that's just based upon my recollection of 161. So I may be mistaken. You have made the request here, county staff is here to listen to the request, that, that the request be expedited. I don't know what's going on with that. I had a request, they sent letters saying that they're searching or looking or thinking or whatever it may be, so.
To my understanding, I don't think there's been any response whatsoever to the document production. What I could do is, after today's hearing, supplement the record with the request itself. The difficulty I have, in absence of an adopted administrative code, I look to something like Civil Rule 45, and there's a fairly long period of time beyond the 2 weeks we just talked about in terms of record supplementation. Perhaps we could address that after the hearing, but it seems to me that I've made my record for purposes of my difficulty in providing you an adequate record based upon the document production requests. So perhaps we could address that within the terms of that 2 week period and see if we can get that done. All right, thank you very much.
But for the record, I'm denying the request to continue us based upon the plain lack of discussion.
If it pleases the meeting, I would like to perhaps have witness statements before I offer my colloquy.
Sure.
I would first like to call Mr. Sean Lynn. Sir, if you could bring up a chair. Before you sit down, you want to swear him in?
Yeah, well, I want you to state your name and address for me.
Sean Lynn, 217 Cascade Street, Leavenworth.
So how do you spell Sean?
S-E-A-N.
Oops.
That's fine.
So how about Lynn?
L-Y-N-N.
All right. Mr. Lynn, would you raise your right hand to me? Do you swear or affirm or penalty perjury that any testimony you give today will be true?
I do.
Thank you very much.
Sir, are you a property owner in Chelan County?
Yes.
Do you own any short-term rental properties?
No.
Are you familiar with this case?
Very.
How are you familiar with the case?
I have worked with the Davises since 2013. I own a vacation rental property management company and have been in this process with the Peshawson Community Council, the Davises, and with our community development leaders.
Would you please briefly describe the issues surrounding the short-term rentals generally in Chelan County, but also focusing your attention on the Peshawson Community Council's concerns regarding the short-term rentals?
Specifically on short-term rentals, you want me to discuss the issues that community development and the regulation issues?
Yes, sir. Please. That's germane.
The community development, our hardworking community development team, is trying to come up with a plan to regulate vacation rentals to resolve a number of issues that they see out there. And I've been involved with that process since before that regulation had started. And along with a group of other professional managers as well. And we would like to see some reasonable regulation, I think. But I think, yeah, so I've been involved in that process. I've been involved in the whole process of the amendment draft code that was going on. I've been meeting with, I've gone to all the public meetings. I meet regularly with the commissioners. I'm in the regular commissioner meetings with the community development, kind of watching what's going on.
Are you familiar with the administrative interpretation that is currently before this meeting?
I am. I'm assuming you're resuming, you're referring to the short-term, or the, excuse me, recreation and tourism land use definition?
Well, specifically, sir, I'm referring to the Chelan County Administrative Interpretation of August 30, 2019, which is part of these proceedings and identified as Exhibit H. I'm going to hand those to you, if you quickly review that.
And if I may, I'm a little, there's been multiple different descriptions of what an STR is, so this is my confusion. I've seen cease and desist citations that have bed and breakfast language, that have this short-term rental. Anyway, there's all kinds of definitions that have come out, so that's why my confusion. So you would like me to review?
Just if you've read it and seen it, you have. If not, that's fine. And while he is reading, I would like to advise the hearings examiner that we have exhibits up to P in these.
Okay. Yeah, so all your exhibits attached to that, the November 27, 2019 letter, will be admitted. And I now see, I was looking at your letter to see the last one. But there is an exhibit up to exhibit P, so exhibits A through P are admitted.
Thank you very much.
Okay, the boarding lodging house definition, I'm assuming, is what you're referring to?
That and also the identification of the subject property as a recreational use.
The small scale recreation tourism use, yes. I disagree with both of these definitions of how vacation rentals are used as an industry professional.
Why?
I think that vacation rentals are used essentially as a residential home. There's no different use than what a long-term renter, what an owner may be doing in that home. They're using it to bathe, to cook, to speak with each other, to watch TV, to sleep. These are all, to me, residential uses of the home. And I don't think that either one of these two items here, the small-scale recreation tourism, nor the bed and breakfast definition, or boarding and lodging definition, meet the definition of what happens in a vacation rental.
You've indicated that you go to public hearings on short-term rental matters. Well, as a short-term, short cutoff, short-term rentals are those sorts of uses where you don't have a 30 or 60, 6 month or 1 year lease, but the properties are rented out occasionally to others.
29 days or less for short term.
Okay, great. In that instance, are you familiar with any provision in the code as a professional in the industry that restricts those sorts of leasehold interests?
To the best of my knowledge, when I started our business in 2013 and doing my due diligence, contacted our county, contacted the people that I needed to contact to make sure that we were operating legally. I wasn't about to invest a whole lot of money in something that wasn't going to work. There was nothing regulating vacation rentals at that time. In the course of this, I have heard our community development folks have said that there is no regulation currently on the books regulating vacation rentals at this time. I've heard, I've actually could document that if I needed to, but I've heard that in hearings and on public radio as well.
Well, not to give a plug to NPR, but are you familiar with a 1991 staff report by a fellow by the name of Simons?
I believe I saw that come through at some point. Was that our county lawyer, a lawyer that was in the county years ago?
I don't believe he was a lawyer, but I'd like to draw your attention quickly to what has been offered and admitted now is Exhibit K. Give you a moment to quickly review that. Thank you.
Okay, I scanned this pretty quickly, but yes.
Understood. Are his comments from 1991 consistent with your understanding of the current status of short-term rentals in Chelan County today?
They are. In fact, we are operating 80 vacation rentals plus under that guise right there, I would say.
In viewing the administrative interpretation of Chelan County Code Section 1122.030 in the manner in which the staff has interpreted the statute in its August 30, 2019 administrative interpretation, will that have an adverse impact upon your business if construed and applied to all of your rentals?
If I could be a little lengthier on my...
Please.
It's a difficult thing to regulate vacation rentals. I think it's much more difficult than community development started out with. And I sat listening to how they were laying that out to the public. The fact that it all is going back to the drawing board to be discussed again, the draft amendment code, is important. It's an important conversation for our communities. This, to me, and what's happening to the Davises, and I testified to this spring after a citation was issued, in my opinion, it's an effort to find a loophole to regulate vacation rentals in our county. And if the Davises are banned from having vacation rentals or a vacation rental on their property, that would have, could have, potentially drastic effects across our county, which is very concerning to me and to many of us that are in this industry and our employees, our homeowners, and all. So yes, this is very concerning to me that while we're discussing draft code, there's an attempt to loophole using a UGA and finding a way to shut down vacation rentals. Very concerning. To regulate by loophole is not a good thing to do in our county, in my opinion.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Does the hearing examiner have any questions of this witness?
No, I don't.
Thank you very much, sir. I'd like now to call Reva Davis.
All right, Ms. Davis, you are still under oath, but can you put your first name for me and provide an address?
Reva, R-E-A-V-A, address 8211 Lynn Street, Peshaston, Washington, 98847.
Ms. Davis, how long have you lived in Peshaston?
We've owned a home since 2009 in Peshaston.
Okay. Does that mean she's lived there or owned a home?
Do you live there?
I currently live there, yes.
Since 2009?
No. So it's hard to determine what living there is. We, 2 years ago, we made it our main home, I should say. My husband still works part-time, and his work includes travel. That's what he does. And so midweek, we go back to Issaquah where he can get on an airplane. This is, to us, a home is where we do life. We belong to a church here. We have our friends here. We belong to a small group. My mother lives with us full-time here. It's our home. And it's been that way for about 2 years. Our driver's license, our voting, everything is here and has been for a couple years. Ever since, yeah.
When did you buy your first home in Peshaston?
2009.
Why?
Because we knew this is where we would want to end up and retire. We've been playing here since we were kids, and this is where we plan to stay.
Are you, you indicated that you're a member of a church here. Which church?
Church of the Nazarene in Leavenworth.
And do you belong to any community organizations in addition to your church affiliation?
Peshaston Community Council. I mean, we're members, not on the staff or anything.
Okay. But you not only purchased your first home where you're currently living, mm-hmm. You purchased a second home. When?
We purchased that in 2013. It had been a home that had been abandoned for 10 years and was a heap pile, junk, cars, abandoned cars everywhere. It was an eyesore, and we had contacted the county and asked them to please have it cleaned up. And after 4 years, nothing was done. And it was a place we were driving by. Parties were happening. Drug deals were happening. It was just an awful place to be next to. And we vowed if ever we could buy it, we would. And so in 2013, the opportunity came available where we bought it so that we could clean it up and have a more respectable place to look at and control who rents there.
And have you made any improvements on that property since you purchased it?
Significant improvements.
Identify them.
A basement that was all cinder block. We've had it drywalled. We've painted. We've improved the landscaping. Just brought things up to code, essentially.
Approximately how much have you spent for those improvements?
$35,000-$40,000.
Okay. Now, and that that second home, what's the address of that home?
That is 8208 Lynn Street. It's right behind us. And when we bought it, we didn't know what we were going to do with it. All we knew is that we wanted to be able to control what we were looking at every day and who we were going to be renting to. We have a large family of six boys, grandchildren, wives, and it was also a place that we realized that our family could come and visit because our house, it's a three-bedroom house, and my mother lives there as well, so it's not big enough to house everybody and our friends. So it was very convenient for us to move into that short-term rental so that our families could use it when they wanted to, and it's just continued that way.
Did you borrow money to purchase that home?
Yes.
Did you borrow money to make the improvements?
Yes.
Now, you have purchased a third home in Peshaston. Is that correct?
Yes.
Where's that located?
That's located on the other side of us on 8225 Riverview Road.
And when did you purchase that home?
In 2017, September of 2017.
Why?
The neighbors had moved out about 9 months prior. They had already turned it into a short-term rental, and they were living in Gig Harbor. They spent a lot of money turning their house into a vacation rental and were going into foreclosure. And they approached us and said, would you please purchase our home so we don't go under? At the time, we had another rental in Bothell that we decided it was smarter for us to have our rentals right next to us so that we could manage them better and take care of them. And so we sold that house to purchase this house.
Did you borrow any money to purchase the Riverview property?
No, we did not. It was actually an exchange, selling one house for this house.
1041 exchange?
Yes, a 1041 exchange.
All right. Now, the three homes that we've just talked about, are they contiguous and abut each other?
Yes. We watch each other all the time.
Now, have you had any complaints from neighbors due to noise, garbage, or parking?
Yes, we had an incident a couple years back. I'm not really clear on the timeline.
Describe the circumstances, please.
We had a group of multi-generational men, grandpa, sons, and grandsons on a weekend fishing trip, and they were playing their country music later into the evening than they realized, and they tried to get a hold of my husband, which he doesn't answer his phone at night. So they called the sheriff, which I think was great, and the sheriff went out, and the family were just absolutely embarrassed that they had music playing. They shut down immediately and didn't realize the noise that they had caused.
Do you have any information regarding who the complainant was?
Yes.
Who was the complainant?
I believe it was Steve Keene, another neighbor.
Okay. How was the issue resolved, if you know?
Well, it was resolved immediately when the sheriff got there, and even, I don't even think the sheriff noted it. He went, walked up, saw Grandpa sitting on the porch with son and said, hey, this music's got to be turned off. And they said, oh my gosh, we had no idea that. And there's a river right there, so I, what happens is the music gets carried back or the noise gets carried back, but it was handled immediately.
Do you know if Mr. Keene took the initiative to ask the guests to turn the music down?
I don't believe he did.
Thank you very much. Does the hearing examiner have any questions?
Kind of an obvious one, but the time of this noise complaint, you weren't at your house?
We were at a wedding.
You weren't at your house?
Correct.
All right, thank you. That's all I have.
No further questions.
All right, thank you.
I'd like to call Mr. Craig Davis.
All right, Mr. Davis, you are still under oath. Will you please state your name and address for the record?
Craig Davis, 8211 Lynn Street, Shaston, 98847.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Davis, you've heard the testimony of your wife, have you not?
Yes.
Do you have any corrections or additions to make to the statements that she made?
No, I don't believe so.
And how long, where do you currently reside?
At 8211 Lynn Street in Peshaston. Okay.
And you've lived there for 2 years, as your wife has indicated, full time?
Correct. We've been permanent residents there for about 2 years.
But you've lived there off and on before that?
That's right. We bought the house in 09 and gradually increased our time there.
Now, prior to the notice of violation, which is the subject matter of this action, were you aware that there was any UGA codes for Shaston?
No, I was not.
When did you first receive notice of the violation from the county?
In September of 2017, we received a notice of violation from the county. Saying that we were violating the local codes and that we were to cease and desist using our home as a short-term rental.
Did they give you any authority for that determination?
The original notice of violation included a, excuse me, an allusion to boarding houses and bed and breakfast. So there was a comparison drawn between the home that we were using as a short-term rental and those two uses.
Did you take time to review the codes with regard to the definitions for boarding houses and bed and breakfasts?
I did, yes.
Did your use of the two homes in question, the Lynn Street property and the Riverview property, was your use of those residences consistent with the terms and definitions of bed and breakfasts or boarding houses?
No, they were not.
What did you do thereafter? What was your response to those notices?
We sent a letter to the county, and we also had our attorney, Wright Noel, also submit a letter to the county stating that we disagreed with their interpretation. And our attorney at the time also sent a correspondence to the county saying that if we did not hear back from them regarding our response, that we would assume that that matter was closed.
See. Did you receive anything back from the county in response to that letter?
We did not for about a year and a half, I guess. The next correspondence we received from the county was in, I'm going to have to ask where
it
was, March of 2019. So from September of 2017 until March of 2019, we had no correspondence from the county regarding notice of violation.
Are you aware of any other homes within the R1 category of homes, single-family dwellings, that are operated as short-term rentals?
Yes, I am. There are, I think, two or three others, two for sure that I know of, in the Peshawta R1 zoning area. There's also a B&B. I don't know if it's still active. It was for a number of years in Peshawta, and then other rental properties as well.
Well, you've heard the testimony of Mr. Mm-hmm. Lynn. Is mm-hmm. his are his comments consistent with what you understand about the short-term rental community in the Chelan County area?
Yes.
How has the community responded to your rentals?
It's been a mixed bag. There are members of the community that have come out in strong opposition to short-term rentals and have voiced their concerns, and then we've had a number of neighbors and members of the community who have come out in support. So there's been some of each.
Now, something I didn't ask your wife, I'm going to ask the questions going from property to property. I would like to start first with the Lynn Street property. Mm-hmm. Are there separate units, rental units within the Lynn Street property, or is it one unit?
One unit. It's a house, a home.
Okay. Do the rooms themselves have room numbers on them?
No, they do not.
Okay. Do you have a housekeeper that serves breakfasts at those residences?
No.
Now, turning to the River Road property, I'd like to ask you the same set of questions. Are there separate units within the River Road property that are separately rented?
No.
And are there room numbers associated with each one of the rooms within the dwelling?
No.
And do you have a housekeeper that serves meals in those in that residence?
No.
And with regard to the fact that you are in proximity to these two units, you're not living in either the Lynn Street property or the River Road property, are you?
No, I'm not.
Do either of you sleep there?
Nope.
Okay. I'm going to ask you a real silly question, perhaps, but are there any recreational activities in the Lynn Street property that would not otherwise be understood as normal residential activities?
No, it's used just like a home.
You have a hot tub, right?
There is a hot tub there.
On both properties?
Yes.
Are they separately rented out?
No.
Are they open to the public?
No.
To whom are they available?
Renters.
Of the properties?
Of the properties, right. I'd like to expand maybe on one of my responses.
Do you want to clarify one of your responses?
Yeah.
Please.
When you asked me about the response from the community, and you know, I gave a couple of answers about people in opposition and people in favor. We've actually had a number of our neighbors utilize the rental properties, and so. I would say that they've actually embraced the idea, and we've been told that they've told me as recently as yesterday that they're really glad that we have those properties and that we're using them the way we are.
Are they used when neighbors are having family over that they're able to expand their living units?
Right, exactly.
Have you had any complaints from neighbors with regard to tax impact?
Yes.
Please explain.
I've had conversations with neighbors who have
described our fixing up those homes and using them as short-term rentals as a form of gentrification, and that the property values in the neighborhood have gone up as, and in the entire community have gone up as a result, and that they're adversely impacted by that.
Have you independently verified that information?
I have not independently verified that information.
This is just comments made from the community.
That's correct.
Thank you very much. I have no further questions to you. At this point, I would renew my motion to permit public, further public input, but I understand that the hearings examiner's decision, but I wanted to make that a part of the record. At this point, I would like to make my presentation, the materials. First of all,
understanding that this is already all in place, so you don't have to hopefully repeat everything that you've seen.
No, but there are a couple of issues that I think need to be amplified. First of all, these hearings are not a free-for-all. We operate within the context of existing codes, statutes, as well as Washington case law. They guide our determinations, and they certainly have guided my presentation of materials. And I've cited maybe three cases that I think are of moment for these proceedings. Salzman or Sleesman versus City of Lacey, that stands for the proposition that ordinances such as 1122030 must be construed in favor of the property owner, not the county. And that looking at 1122030, which appears to be fairly plain on its face, without any ambiguity, the statute itself has to be interpreted and applied by the county on the basis of its plain reading. We are not in a Berg versus Hudson situation where you have a need for oral testimony to determine what was intended by the statute itself. As best I can tell, this is an issue, at least for 1122030, one of first impression. This is the first time the statute has been interpreted in the way the county is currently interpreting it. And I would point out that in looking at this, and again drawing your attention to Sleesman versus City of Lacey, the staff's recommendation are not entitled to the sort of deference they are normally given, because they have applied the statute in a manner that is inconsistent with prior interpretations, and I've cited those in my materials. I would go so far as to say that the staff has attempted to usurp the Planning Commission and the Board of County Commissioners' legislative authority by concocting an interpretation of the statute that is not only arbitrary and capricious, but is absurd. And one of the other statutory concerns that we would have is that the interpretation not lead to absurd results. And I'll elaborate a little bit more on that. So the difficulty that I have is that the interpretation that's been offered by the department is so far removed from the prior interpretations of the statute. We mentioned Mr. Simmons' offering of 1991, which is part of the record. That in itself is proof that the staff's interpretation has gone woefully off the tracks. I would also point out that this proceeding is going on in the midst of the planning board's and Board of County Commissioners' review of these ordinances. Let me be very clear. We are not suggesting that the Planning Commission and the Board of County Commissioners do not have the authority to regulate short-term rentals, as the City of Seattle and King County have done. And in fact, it's my understanding that the implementation of that regulation is ongoing as we speak. And I will also point out that there's a model statute within Chelan County, up by Lake Chelan, that has been adopted and for a fairly small area. Now, it's my understanding in reviewing the two statutes that staff is attempting to offer to the Planning Commission and the Board of County Commissioners a countywide version of that. And there's no question that that sort of legislative determination, with input by the stakeholders, adequate notice of hearings, and adequate input by the stakeholders, is paramount and should be permitted to proceed. As of the date today, the legislative authorities of this county have refrained from adopting the position that's now being taken by the department, ad hoc, as an administrative fiat to circumvent the ability of my clients to maintain the use of their properties consistent with the existing code. It seems to me that the way in which the department has exceeded their authority would, if approved by this hearings examiner, would make the hearings examiner complicit in the usurpation of that legislative authority. Allegation. It's a bold allegation and one I take very seriously. Very seriously. It's there. It's on the table. Now, let's look at what the department has suggested. The department has taken, instead of looking at the matrix itself, which is, as I point out, plain and clear on its face, they start off with a couple of definitions. They start, instead of going to 1122.030, they go to 1498.1645. Now, there's no authority given in the materials that I've read from the department to suggest where they got the notion that a short-term rental is somehow a recreational activity. I can think of a few recreational activities that go on in a single-family home. But I would also point out that Washington case law is abundantly clear. A single-family dwelling is a single-family dwelling is a single-family dwelling. The Washington Supreme Court has addressed that issue and determined it against the county's current position. I've cited the Wilkinson case in the materials, and the department's analysis and its starting point is just simply wrong and arbitrary and capricious. I don't know where they came up with the notion that a single-family dwelling can be a recreational activity. But let's analyze this a little further. Starting with Code Section 1498, 1645, rural tourism recreational. That's what you find determined in the notice of violation. It means an experience involving visits to rural settings or rural environments for the purpose of participating or experiencing in activities, events, and attractions not readily available in the 206 area code. It's an experience, that's not a land use. And by the way, that definition isn't found in 1122 anywhere. And short-term rentals, as described by Mr. Lynn, can be found in Tukwila as well as in Leavenworth. So this is not a land use which is different than something that you can find in the 206 area code. Now let's turn to the second citation that they make. Code section 1498-1795. Small scale recreation and tourism. It includes recreation centers, commercial facilities to serve those uses. But you know, it goes on to talk about cultural religious camps, retreats, campgrounds, RV parks, lodges, cabin rentals. These aren't cabin rentals. These are single family residences which are specifically identified in the code. And by the way, the uses that are referred to in 1428-1795 are identical to the uses or akin to the uses that are identified in the matrix under recreational uses. Now the term recreational use is a category of general, more specific uses. So for them to turn their attention to say, well, if you have a short-term rental, then somehow you are a recreational use. That's absurd. Now how should they have gone about the process? Well, you start off with the statute itself. As a lawyer, if I've got a court rule or a statute, I look to that first before I go off on a lark trying to determine if I could find some sort of definition that might serve my purpose. So when I look at 1120.22.030, I go down the list of land uses, and I'll refer the hearings examiner to page 5 of my memorandum, and we come up single family dwelling. Well, as you heard the testimony of my clients, this is a single family dwelling as defined in 1498. This is not a boarding house. This is not a bed and breakfast. It's a short-term rental. I would also point out that short-term rentals or long-term rentals aren't distinguished in the single-family dwelling category. And the difficulty I have for not only the Davises, but the clients that Mr. Lynn has, is that the definition that is now being offered by the County Department of Community Development is suggesting that rentals are recreational activities that will require some sort of regulation. Because there's no differentiation or distinction between long-term rentals and short-term rentals. Just like their code does not make any distinction between owner-occupied single-family dwellings and renter-occupied single-family dwellings. And in fact, the Wilkinson's case says those distinctions have no, well, they're distinctions without a difference, and leads to an absurd result. That in their pursuit of defining my client's single-family dwellings rented on less than 30 days as a recreational use, That would mean every rental in this county would be subject to, I guess, conditional use permit, or some other regulation, which is absurd. And going back to the Sleesman case, these ordinances have to be construed in favor of the property owner, not the whim of the department. So if you look at 11-22-030, you find single-family dwellings, which these two properties are, and we have utilization of those properties as a short-term rental. These are not bed and breakfast, they're not boarding houses. I have cited in my materials and made note of the fact that we have a 1991 planner's memorandum that I think is very clear in its face, has not until this these proceedings changed one iota. In 2005, there was an attempt to regulate short-term rentals, which is documented in the materials that I provided, and that went nowhere. Now, the political will of the residents of this county have to be given some weight when the Department of Community Development decides to take action. And by virtue of the fact that neither the Planning Commission nor the Board of County Commissioners have seen fit to offer legislation based upon input from the stakeholders of this county to regulate short-term rentals, which they have absolute authority to do so. Absolute authority to do so. And I suspect that they will do so in a short period of time. But absent that legislative action, what we have here is a cynical attempt to accomplish by administrative fiat, through this administrative interpretation, that which the department cannot do or convince the Planning Commission they should do or the Board of County Commissioners to adopt legislatively. And the difficulty with that is that the determination or the approval of that administrative interpretation unfortunately has countywide implications because it will be utilized by the Department of Community Development to regulate every one of Mr. Lynn's rentals. And you will see me again probably, but you will see a continuing rash of administrative rulings, code violation, notices of code violation that will be administratively dealt with over and over and over again. And I think that the necessity at this point in time is to allow the Planning Commission, on advice by the Department of Community Development, with the ultimate authority with the Board of County Commissioners, to take their legislative course to draw in not only the staff recommendations, but also the input from the stakeholders in fashioning a short-term rental regime that is consistent with the existing code. There is nothing in the offering made by the department that is consistent with the current code. Nothing. The way in which they've gone about defining their terms and then working backwards to bootstrap a definition is simply preposterous. There's not a single one of the recreational uses found in 11-22-030 that is residential in nature. And I'm not counting the tents and the RV camps because they are not. In sum, And based upon the information that's currently available, which is woefully inadequate, for instance, there's no indication in the materials that have been submitted by the department that indicate that a housing survey has been done to determine what desperate impact these short-term rentals may have on rental housing stock in the Chelan County area. Having done some of these studies myself as a planner down in Los Angeles, I will tell you they are painstaking, and I understand that the department has requested funding for surveys to be done of that housing stock and some assistance in doing the sort of hard work to develop a strategy that is consistent with the needs of Chelan County. It's tough work, but none of that has been done. And yet they proceed on with a notice of violation based upon the methodology that they presented to this hearing. They haven't provided a statement by the sheriff. Is there a public nuisance component to this? Is my client's utilization of these two short-term rentals a public nuisance? Only one complaint in all these many years. I did a rough calculation, and I won't belabor that, but it's, I would venture to guess, if I were, and this is just supposition on my part, if I went to the sheriff tomorrow and I'd ask him about short-term rentals, how many times he's been called out to short-term rentals to break up fights and deal with public nuisance issues, I would be told, very few. Probably have more problems in the bars. But the point of it is that there has been nothing offered to suggest there's any public nuisance or public issue involved with these short-term rentals that would justify this sort of administrative fiat. So, the department's administrative interpretation of August 30, 2019 is clearly erroneous, both in law and fact. The Wilkinson case, I think, speaks volumes to what we should expect. I have submitted to this tribunal by way of additional authority, although I do not know if it's a reported case out of Austin, Texas, but it's the most recent, having come down November 27th of 2019. But the analysis that was taken by that appellate court, dealing certainly with other issues, but as it deals with the nature and regulation of short-term rentals vis-a-vis the rights of a homeowner, I think still is persuasive. And I'd also point out that the case amplifies the materials that I presented to you by offering federal case law that I didn't get to. But there's a body of federal law that deals with land use issues that I think are relevant and germane to your analysis in determining whether or not you agree or disagree with our appeal. But the administrative interpretation of the department of August 30 is clearly erroneous in law and fact, not supported by substantial evidence, constitutes an unconstitutional action in excess of Chelan County's jurisdiction and authority, and as I point out, usurping the legislative authority of the Planning Commission and the Board of County Commissioners. Accordingly, the administrative interpretation should be reversed with a finding that the current land uses, at least at this time, and based upon the current existing code, are not only lawful, but are consistent with the terms of 11-22-030. Thank you.
The only thing that I want to submit,
you have to identify yourself.
I'm sorry, Kirsten Larson, planning manager.
I wanted to submit, there was one additional public comment that came in between the issuance of the staff report and materials.
Which one was that?
That was from the Moody's.
If I can get a copy of that, I'd appreciate it. No objection.
And then all the email correspondence and exhibits, so I know you were provided them.
Email correspondence between essentially the three of us?
Yeah. Okay.
No objection.
I think all of this is, but I just wanted to make sure it was all part of it, so, and that was all I had to add.
All right, anything further from the appellant?
No, thank you.
All right, so would the appellant like the record to be kept open?
Yes, I would like the opportunity to communicate with the director to determine how quickly documents request can be fulfilled. It's been out there for at least 3 months that I'm aware of. I recognize that that obtaining emails and other documents can be an arduous task, but I think plenty of time has gone by. I would initially suggest that the record be kept open for 2 weeks, subject to revisiting that issue for the sole purpose of addressing the document production, but 2 weeks for additional public input.
Do you have any position on that?
No.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to keep the record, public record open until December 18, 2019 at 5 p.m. for the sole purpose of the appellant submitting additional written testimony and evidence. At that point, the record will be closed and my decision will be made within the next 10 working days. If the appellant has...
That puts you at December 28. That's fine.
The 10 working days, so you exclude the weekends and...
And holidays.
In any event, I'll have a written decision made. If there's a request, the appellants have any other motions, they can file them by the 18th as well. If you want the record to stay open. But that's my ruling as of today.
Understood. And I think that, as I pointed out, I believe that we can have our public comments, letters and the like, done within that period of time. The only question I have, because I have not spoken to the director myself, is for that document production to the county. Other than that, we'll be closed by the 18th.
Okay. All right, those can be submitted electronically.
Super. Thank you very much.
All right, we'll turn to the next item on today's agenda. Thank you all for your patience. The next item on the agenda is an application for a plat alteration that was submitted by Leroy Farmer. You have an application number PA 2019-005. This is a request to relocate a walkway easement related to the property located within Chelan County that is specifically described in the staff report as well as in the application materials. For the record, I will admit into the record that this type of reference as staff report, all the attachments to the staff report, which included all the application materials, all of the agency comments that have come through, the noticing documents, any public comments that have come through, the original plat, these plat maps, and they're going to admit all those items. Indeed, I will admit the entire plan stuff filed into the record at this time by this reference and turn this matter over to the chair for the staff presentation.
Thank you. I'm Emily Morgan, the staff planner for the subject plat alteration. So this is, again, a plat alteration to relocate a 6-foot wide walkway easement. The subject property was originally lots 9 and 10 of the Three Lakes Country Club Estates number 2 subdivision. In 2017, a boundary line adjustment was recorded, which dissolved the shared property line and resulted in consolidating the two lots. However, with the boundary line adjustment, the 6-foot walkway easement that straddled the shared property line was not extinguished or altered. This proposed alteration would relocate the existing 6-foot easement from the center of the combined lots to run adjacent to the southeastern property line. Staff has reviewed the application materials, public comments, all in compliance with all applicable codes, and therefore recommends approval as conditioned. Actually, one further thing. I did receive public comment from the neighbors yesterday, so that is, I will forward that to you as the file of record.
That's already part of the file of record, but this is an additional public comment from folks that have already commented?
Correct. It's, in a way, a bit of a revision and just adding more supplemental information.
All right. Their names again, just from their notes.
Jeannie and John Barnes.
The applicant ready to proceed?
Yes.
All right, could you come forward, sir? Have you state your name and an address for the record for me?
Leroy Farmer, 57 Lake Cortez Lane, Malaga.
All right, sir, would you raise your right hand for me? Do you swear or affirm or depend on the perjury of the testimony you give today will be the truth?
Yes, I do.
Thank you very much. Go ahead and have a seat. What would you like to tell me about this project?
Well, like she said, I just simply wanted to do a plat alteration. I was in the process of, well, I applied for an addition above our garage to be built, and it was pointed out to me that there was an easement that ran too close to the addition I wanted, so the planning department said we can't approve it until something is done with the easement. I was totally understanding that the easement had been released by the Homeowners Association, and I think all those documents are in the record. So I guess initially I just thought, oh, there's a mistake, or, you know, that the easement's not there. Since then, I've realized that there's two different entities involved here. The Three Lakes Homeowners Association kind of regulates property, who can trust, well, who has access to various things, community property. There's two parks on the lake that have now, well, not now, but previously been established to accommodate all the homeowners so that they would have access to the lake. Originally, I think when the plat map was designed in 66, that was not the case, and so they established some easements through various properties around the lake. And since then, like I said, in 02, when they came to me and said, you know, you're one of the easements that goes to the lake, would you like that eliminated? And I said, well, sure, nobody ever uses it anyway. It doesn't matter to me one way or the other. So anyway, right now, I just simply have applied to move that easement over, and it's never been used. Nobody ever asked about it, so.
It's never been developed as a pathway or gravel or anything like that?
No, nothing.
Unless you looked at the plat map.
That's why it kind of shocked me, yeah, because I came in and I see the dotted line there, and they said, you know, it's still on the plat map. And I understand that there's a pretty extensive process to eliminate that, which includes other homeowners and everything, which was not taken, so it's there. And that's why I need to have it altered rather than eliminated. It's just a simpler process.
All right, thank you. Mm-hmm. Have you had a chance to look at the proposed conditions of approval in the event the project is approved?
Yeah, the thing you said, I think, yeah.
Conditions of approval.
Right,
do you have
right.
Any objection to those?
No, everything looks good to me.
You are the property owner, two lots where the adjacent, one's on, one's adjacent to where the easement occurred and located, right?
Right.
All right, thank you very much. Anything else you'd like to add, sir?
Well, The barns are here, and I, you know, I'm assuming we'll hear from them. Do I stay here and then go back?
No, you can go have a seat.
Okay, okay. Okay, all right, okay.
All right, thank you.
Sure.
And as promised, did anybody from the public wish to testify on this matter? I don't want you talking over each other, but you can both come up at the same time and take turns.
Jeannie Barnes. J-E-A-N-N-E.
Barnes, B-A-R-N-E-S.
Correct.
Address for you?
31 Lake Cortez Lane, Malaga.
And your name and address, sir?
John Barnes. Same address.
All right, each of you raise your right hands. Do each of you swear affirmative that you perjure any testimony you give to me with the truth?
Yes.
Yes.
Right, who wants to talk first?
Well, we just wanted to tell you that we have submitted our testimony for today in writing out of fear of public speaking. and just, we won't go over, you know, the information that we've already provided. We are concerned that it's being moved next to our property. And if the easement is still active, we have safety and privacy concerns about that. It would be right outside our front entrance. So we have several questions actually that are in the written information we gave today.
Barnes, did you have anything to add to
that? Only that we were aware of this easement when we first acquired property out there. Those two lots that Leroy has were available. But we wanted to buy a property that was away from any traffic easements at the time. So we purposely bought something away from that easement. And that we're aware that it's not being used now, but we're also concerned about possible future use.
Emily Morgan assured us that you would read all of the information that we have submitted.
Everything that's in the record so far, several times, and I will go back and read what you just submitted as well.
Anything else we should add?
Wide open. This is your time.
I guess that our concern is great. Mm-hmm. And we do not want an easement suddenly to appear in next to our entryway, and would like for the farmers, we have discussed it with them, as we said in our letter, we would like for them to move it, that they can move it on their property in another location, away from our entrance, or go for the abandoned completely solution.
Any other member of the public have to testify on this matter? Okay, is there anything further from staff?
No, nothing further, thank you.
Farmers,
anything
further from you?
If
there is, you
got
to come forward.
Okay.
You
got to swear in again, or nope, okay. You know, I just like to make it clear that we're good neighbors, and if I had had any idea that this would be a problem for them, I simply wouldn't have put it in that spot. But I would like to reiterate the fact that no one ever asked about an easement. In other words, the thing just, I'd like to say that I don't see where it could ever be a problem for them. And so I'm just simply trying to get this thing moved through so I can build. So I mean, I live next door, and those easements were, that easement, as far as the homeowner association, was released in 02, and I don't think the Barnes even knew about it, and they're my neighbor. So the easement just doesn't exist outside of the particular property owner and maybe whoever's working with it.
They said they did. That's
what right. They bought their lots. Right. Well, that was in 77. That was before the release. So anyway.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. No.
Right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are we done then?
Yeah, what I want to do is I'm going to close the public pressure portion of this hearing, and I will have a written decision made within the next 10 working days.
Okay.
Last item on today's agenda is a couple of permit applications. This is a repairing variance, given application number RIPD 2019-006 and a wetland variance 2019-002. These are requests for variances submitted by Grady Associates on behalf of the property owners to reduce a required repairing setback and wetland buffer for construction of a residence and septic system on property located within Chelan County. It is more specifically described in the staff report as well as in the application materials. And for the record, at this time, by this reference, I will make into the record that staff report on the attachments of the staff report, which included all the application materials, all the noticing documents, all the expert witness reports that have come in, the agency comments. I don't believe there's been any public comments to date. I'll admit all those items, and I will admit the entire plan stuff in the record at this time on this reference. And here is a letter from Ms. Morgan again for the staff presentation.
Thank you. So this riparian variance is to reduce the 100-foot riparian setback to 5 feet from the ordinary high watermark of an NP type stream. The wetland variance is to reduce the 200-foot buffer for category one wetland to 5 feet to 8 feet buffer. The proposed residence is to be approximately 1,645 square feet, and there is 800 square feet of mitigation plantings proposed with application. The proposed variances to reduce the associated riparian and wetland buffers are not anticipated to constitute the granting of a special privilege, as other property owners in close proximity are developed residentially. Due to the application of the Critical Areas Ordinance of Title 11, the subject property is entirely encumbered by protective buffers associated with the wetland, as well as the stream present on site. The proposed mitigation plantings are anticipated to alleviate potential impacts that could be associated with the proposed residential development. The area to be planted with these mitigation plantings were historically cleared and would potentially therefore improve the function of the expanding wetlands and associated buffer. Staff has reviewed the application materials in compliance with all applicable codes and therefore recommends approval as conditioned.
All right, thank you very much. Is the applicant ready to proceed?
Yes.
Can you state your name and address for the record?
Ryan Walker, 151 South Warden Street, Suite 101, Wenatchee.
All right, Mr. Walker, would you raise your right hand? Do you swear or affirm under penalty of perjury that any testimony you give today will be the truth?
Yes.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Walker, are you here as an agent authorized to appear and speak on behalf of the property owners today?
Yes, I am.
And what would you like to tell me about this matter?
Well, I think it's clear and detailed in the application, the site plan, and the staff report, there is no possible reasonable use of this property without approval of both variances. There was formerly a home on the property. It was demolished. Shortly after the applicants acquired the property, they're desiring to build back in the same location. It's a cleared building area and really the only viable building spot on the property. They've worked with the neighbor to obtain an easement for the drain field and worked with the health district for approval of that. We have read the conditions of approval and agree with all those. I have one, I guess it's a addition I would like to recommend on condition number 4 regarding the flood development permit. I'd like to add that this would be required if the building site is in the floodplain. We don't think it is, but prior to the building permit or added, if we can submit information from a surveyor showing it's not in the floodplain, no flood development permit would be required because we couldn't meet the requirements of it. But just to make sure we can meet that condition, if you could add a sentence that says only if the building area is in a floodplain. Other than that, we agree with all the conditions of approval and would like to answer any questions you have.
I don't have any questions. My first reading of the words without looking at the map, and I thought that the request was fairly dramatic, and then I looked at the map
to
see what's actually on there.
It's a tough property.
All right, so I don't have any. I don't have any questions.
Okay. Thanks.
I'm going to turn this back to the public now. Did any member of the public come to testify on this matter? Is there anything further from staff?
Maybe just for his recommended condition for adding on to four, that it does have to be provided by a licensed surveyor to provide the information of whether or not it is or is not in the floodplain. And other than that, nothing further. Thank you.
Licensed surveyor, you said?
Yes.
Or anything further from the applicant related to that?
No, thanks.
All right, then what I'm going to do, folks, is I'm going to close the public record portion of the hearing in this matter as well. I'll have a written decision made within the next 10 working days. There are no other items on today's agenda, so I will now adjourn this December 4, 2019 meeting of the Chelan County Hearing Examiner, and thank you all for coming.